Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I have got a great guest for us today. Johan Kriek is joining us, and he is going to talk to us about maximizing your training opportunities during the summer and improving the junior tournament experience. Johan and I have been exchanging some messages on Facebook and about some recent experiences some of his academy students have had at tournaments and what can be done to make these experiences more valuable to the players, but also to the families and to the coaches that have to spend the money and the time to travel. And he's got some great suggestions and great ideas that I'm looking forward to discussing with him today. So if you'd like to call in and join the conversation, you know we always love callers. That number is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. Without any further ado, let me bring Johan on the line. Johan, are you there?
Yes, Lisa. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for calling in and joining us on the air today. And I'm just really looking forward to digging a little more deeply into this whole idea of what we can do to make the junior tournament experience better, and also what our kids can be doing this summer to really maximize their time on the training court. So any
sure.
wisdom you care to share with us, I know we'd all love to hear.
Absolutely. Now, I obviously the summer is a very busy time for most academies. I run my academy here out of Charlotte, so I'm in the midst of my summer camp business as well. And we've got kids from far and wide around the country and also from around the world. I've got a kid from England who lives in Qatar, actually. He's here with me right now. So he's here for a couple of months practicing. And we've got other kids from other parts of the world. So it's a very important part of the time for the juniors. Yeah, they got to take some time off as well. But it's also a time to reconstruct and rebuild some of the tennis because obviously a lot of tennis tournaments are being played during school years, etc. So it's important that you work in the off season basically on your tennis as well. So the summer is a really busy time for not only me and the camp business, but also for my juniors to rebuild and restock up on some extra stuff for their tennis.
It's so interesting because when I was a kid, I only played tournaments in the summer. I wasn't a national level player, so I wasn't traveling around, you know, all during the school year. But it seemed to me that there were tournaments pretty much every week all summer long for me to play in. And that schedule really has changed, in current times. And now, other than, you know, the couple of big national tournaments and zonals, there aren't a ton of tournament opportunities for the kids, which, like you said, it kind of opens the window for kids to get out on the practice court, hone their skills, and really build on what they've learned during the year. Are there some specific drills or tasks that you like to see your kids work on?
Well, obviously, I've got kids that are playing pretty high-level tournaments, and then there are, you know, I've got kids from ages 6 through 18 in my academy, and I also have different age groups in my camp business. But, typically my academy, consistent academy kids also work pretty hard with me in the camp business, so it's basically a continuation of the academy business with them, and they kind of continue on their path to enrich and better their tennis. So what I do a lot with them, especially a couple of them are very highly good, play very high junior tennis tournaments. They play nationals, they play, you know, one or two or three in the state of North Carolina in different age groups. So, you know, we prep them with what they need. For instance, I got a girl going this coming weekend. She's going to Plantation, Florida to play the 14th National Clay Tournament in Plantation, Florida. So, you know, we're staying outdoors. It's very hot. I mean, we've had over 100-degree temperatures the last week. It's dropped down to a balmy 94, 95. So yesterday was 99. So, you know, we have to practice in the conditions that you're going to play in Florida, and it's even more humid down there. So, you know, we have to maintain the practice regimen in very much the same type of weather conditions. If they play on clay, we got to stay on clay. If they play on hard courts, they got to play on hard courts, and so forth. So, you know, I don't, for my highly acclaimed junior tennis professionals, really, is basically just a continuation of all the good things we started with them maybe 2-3 years ago. And, you know, you just keep on adding to their tennis as they mature, as they get stronger. But, you know, for the campers, it's a whole different thing. A lot of them come to the camps, and you kind of have to be kind of careful with them, because depending on where they're from in the world, if they're not used to this type of temperatures, you got to be careful. They got to really force them to hydrate. You got to take a lot more breaks. You got to make sure they got the right clothing on. They bring snacks. They bring the right type of drinks and so forth, not just water. So it's a little bit different. But the kids that know their business, that play nationals, that play a lot of big tournaments, they know the drill, and they just they do a better job at this. So it's a very different approach when you have campers versus kids that are in your academy.
Right. How important is playing practice matches?
Very, very important. I play more than half of my week, I play practice matches, and what I do is I stagger it. So if we work on something like serve returns or specialty shots, which includes half volleys, back and overhead, swing volleys, drop shot volleys, lob volleys, all kinds of different things that you don't really necessarily practice all the time. We work on that the first part of the week, especially Monday, Tuesdays. By Wednesdays, we play a lot more points and point construction. We work continuously on fitness, obviously, after practice, stretching. So, you know, you got to set them up for success. So you do play a lot more match play. It's not just drills. I see a lot of kids, they hit the ball incredibly well, but they have absolutely no clue how to put all of those tools that they've learned, how to construct a ball or how to spin a ball or how to slice a ball. But they don't understand how to play a match. So it's a long process to get a talented kid to be an all-around player that can maybe choose between aggressive style play or more defensive or whatever they have to do in a particular match. So it does take a long time to get it sorted out, but you got to play a lot more match play as well.
What are your thoughts on having coaching available to players during tournament matches?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. I go to a lot of tournaments. I've been to a ton of tournaments this year. I can't go to every match at every tournament my kids play, obviously. There's something called, I call it PIP, play in peace. You know, sometimes it's good to a parent to just take a kid to a tournament and, you know, they're playing at 11 o'clock, drop them off at 10 and let them warm up and then play their own match, pick them up later. Kids have to also have that kind of autonomous moments in their tennis career. It's not just you want to coach at every tournament that they play, but obviously the highly ranked players, you know, that have a chance of potentially playing very high D1, and from there, who knows, they might play professionally. You want to take a little bit more care of those people because they show the desire and the need and the skill level that requires a little bit more attention at tournaments. And I think especially for young girls up to about 16 or so, it's very important to have quite a bit of input in their match play and their tournament structure.
Do you think it would help American tennis if our tournament structure was such that kids could receive coaching during the matches?
Absolutely. I think it's I understand that in the pro level, you know, you have different rules for the ATP, and now you have some coaching from WTA coaches during a match. I don't even know exactly how the rules are structured, but apparently coaches can run down on a court at changeovers or perhaps after sets. But in men's tennis, there is just nothing like that. You got to do signals, and you can get fined for it, blah, 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 blah. I just, you know, that's kind of a red herring subject for me. for many decades, I've said that they have to change the sport of tennis. I understand Federer is even against it. He wants it to be a pure sport where nobody, you know, it's mano a mano. Nobody has input to some level. I can agree with that. But on the other hand, tennis is always an evolutionary sport. It's changing all the time. We see how it's changing. The professional side of tennis is changing. Junior tennis in America has changed. It's changed dramatically in other parts of the world, especially where I come from in South Africa. But, you know, I just think that coaching, being allowed to go on the court and coach with some specific guidelines and rules, I think would be great. I mean, this thing about change a kid running off a court and taking a 10-minute bathroom break is just ludicrous. I mean, there's just so much gamesmanship going on and some of these loose rules and loose stuff. And I just think, you know, I honestly can say in my entire professional tennis career, I don't think I've left the court twice unless I had a serious stomach problem. We just never left the court. I mean, you get it to get your business done before you walk on center court at Wimbledon. You don't have really any time to run off and go and sit in a commode and just, you know, read your Time magazine. We never even thought about that. We never had a leisure time like that. But now it seems like it is an epidemic in junior tennis, how these gamesmanship and all these things to break somebody's concentration or rhythm or whatever. My kid sits on a damn tennis court in the blazing sun while somebody has run off to the bathroom to go and cry or do something, whatever, and maybe get some coaching. Who knows? I just think it's ridiculous. But there should be some rules made that are pretty darn clear and can actually help coaches help their kids on the tennis court.
Well, playing devil's advocate here, you know, there's so much complaining going on about the lack of officiating at junior tournaments already. And the fact that officials aren't always up to date on the rules, and, you know, I've written about this a bunch, situations where I've watched my kid, you know, tell the official, please go get the rule book, I'll show you where it is, where it says what I'm telling you, which is crazy. So if we add yet another layer of rules that an official has to enforce, you know, where does that leave us? I just feel like it's already such a problem out there with, like you said, the gamesmanship, and beyond that, the cheating and the fact that the officials don't even know the current rules. If we add another level, what is that going to do?
Well, again, I think, look, the USDA is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. They have plenty of money to dish out, and I think there's enough volunteers that can probably get the rule book from the USDA, study it, get a little testing done. I think that's the bare minimum. And we can help our junior tennis be a lot more controlled and a lot more precise. And it's not such a crazy thing that we see sometimes with cheating and all this stuff. I think that definitely it has to come from the USDA. And there got to be some stipend made to some of these officials. I mean, I've actually seen top USDA officials at a tournament that actually cannot keep score. I mean, absolutely do not know how to keep score in a tiebreaker. They didn't know which side the kid's supposed to serve. The kid tells, you know, one kid was arguing about the score, and they would play, you know, even points on the ad side, and the two kids just go along, and the person stands there, USDA, with a USDA shirt on, and we are pulling our hair out, and, you know, come on, you know. And so
right.
I think that definitely there can be some improvement made to them, but it has to come from the top at the USDA, and I think there's perhaps you know, something we can do from that end. But it's never a perfect science. I think
right.
the rules are there, but I think the rules are incredibly lax, and there's a lot of anger and resentment, something that comes from tournament when you have officials that actually are not officials. They're just there for a reason other than, you know, maybe they get a stipend. I don't know.
Well, you have an interesting perspective now, because you've come through playing every level of tennis there is to play. Now you're coaching. You're a dad also. I know your kids are, you know, young, but I've seen pictures of them with tennis rackets in their hands, so I know they're getting out on the court. And so you're experiencing this whole world of junior tennis from a very different point of view now. And I think it's really interesting to get your perspective on this, because you grew up obviously in South Africa, as you said, so a very different culture, a very different tennis world than what we have here in the States, but tennis is tennis, and there's a lot of aspects of the sport that are global, and what happens here should be the same as what happens in South Africa or Spain or Japan or anywhere else that the sport is being played. And I don't know, I just feel like we have a broken system here. That's not news to anybody. But there has to be some concrete steps that can be taken, either by USTA, by coaches, by the parents themselves, to make this a more pleasant and productive experience as we spend 10 years going through it. What else besides the officiating and the bathroom breaks do you see as issues, and what are your ideas for how we can make things better?
You know, as you said, I did not grow up in the U.S. in the 70s and 80s playing junior tennis. I played my junior tennis up till early 70s before I left South Africa. I was a 17-year-old aspiring tennis player, never knowing where I was going to land. I just had a big heart, and I loved the sport, and I wanted to go see what I could do out there. And, you know, bless my parents. I mean, they did exactly what most parents of a talented kid would do. I mean, they spent a tremendous amount of sacrifice financially, time-wise, a cost to the other kids if you have more than one. I was the eldest of four. I rarely saw my sister and my brothers during the holiday season because my dad was on a farm. He had a farm. My mom would take me around, and we would go and play junior tournaments all over South Africa, and we'd drive everywhere. And so, you know, we did very much the same thing. And unfortunately, you know, very much the same type of politics is basically in every country and every association. I mean, you see it, you know, I see it so clearly now. I mean, you have big headlines about Kevin Anderson almost beat Djokovic, but people don't know behind the scenes, Tennis South Africa and him have had a big spat over the last 2 weeks. I'm sure it's played on his mind a little bit. You know, he just finally, it's just, who knows what the details are, but it seems like it never ends. It, even when I was there, it was a big problem. I never got a dime from the Tennis South African people, or at that time it was called the Tennis Union. And, you know, it's just like, it seems like the harder the school of knocks is, the better the player comes out. Kevin Anderson came to the United States, went to Illinois to college. He honed his tennis skills here and, you know, basically made it on his own. And so it seems like the same old stuff rears its ugly head. You know, even though the USTA is a very wealthy organization from a standpoint of looking at all of the other associations, luckily there are a couple of countries that are extremely lucky that they have these major Grand Slam tournaments in their countries. And you know who they are. You got the US Open, which spins off a lot of money. You got the Australian Open in Australia, which spins off a lot of money. And look at the problems they have with their association. So, this, it just seems like it's not only money that is always an issue. I just think that, you know, the integrity of the sport seems to be pretty much intact wherever you go, because the rules are the rules. Tennis is a great life sport. You can play till you're very old. But you see that, you know, even people with countries with big money and opportunities, you don't necessarily always rule the world. We used to rule the world in the 50s, 60s, and maybe 70s to the 80s, maybe a little bit more. With America and Australia. But, you know, the world has changed dramatically. I mean, tennis has grown in many, many countries where nobody played tennis before. The Eastern Bloc came through since the early 90s. And now you got Serbians, you got Croatians, you got Yugoslavians, you got Polish, you got everybody coming into the sport. And it's great. And I think the next big push will probably be Southeast Asia. I would expect a lot more kids to come out of Asia, maybe mostly China. Why shouldn't there be more men from China in the top 100 of the world? I think it's coming. It's going to be a matter of time. Li Na did a great job for its country and its women's tennis division, so you get a lot more Chinese women playing tennis. But where are the men? We don't see a lot of them, but I think they'll come. And so it's not only money. I think there's a lot more other factors. You know, the culture that we grow up in, I think, you know, there are cultures that it's a do-or-die world. If winning a match means the difference between eating and not eating that day is very different from a kid that's going to go home in his Lexus, you know?
But tennis has always been a sport of privilege, hasn't it? I mean, it's always been expensive to play.
It's a very, very expensive sport, and it takes a heck of a long time to get good at it. And you need private lessons, and you need a lot of different things that go with it. My academy is small enough that I feel like we are actually, it's actually a misnamed to call my academy a tennis academy in a sense, like you would expect, you know, 6, 8, 10 kids to a court. That's not how we operate. Most of the time it's 4 to 1 is the max. For any good tennis players in my academy, but a lot of the times we pull people aside and we work one-on-one with them, or it's 2-on-1 and you work around with 2 coaches per court. You know, so it's a little bit different than the run-of-the-mill academy that you would think. But it is a sport of privilege. It's an expensive sport. Tennis rackets are not cheap. The travel and all of that stuff is just it makes more sense for kids to go into team sports because it's a little different. You know, it's very different. You go as a team, but tennis is a very individual sport, and it's a very tough sport to get very good at it.
So let's get back to the junior tournaments and what you're seeing out there when you go with your kids and what you would like to see change or improve.
Let me address a couple of things. One, you and I very well know that there's a big tournament in Macon, Georgia. I mean, I think it's an incredibly hot place to play. In fact, I played there when I was trying to make a comeback in 93 or 94, and I unfortunately pulled a calf muscle in 110-degree weather against Mahesh Bhupathi, and I was up a set and double break. I would have definitely won the match, but I ended up having to default. But it's just ironic that that happened to me in my kind of comeback, but that's because I was much older. I was 36 years old trying to make a comeback and playing whatever. But, I just think, again, the USTA is in charge of those tournaments. There's a lot of volunteers involved. But let's be a little bit smarter. Obviously, the facility wasn't completed. They had very little shade for the kids, and it was incredibly hot. It was way over 100 degrees. There's no way these 12- and 13-year-old girls are going to be able to play 3 matches a day in that type of temperature. And you can pump them full of Gatorade and full of Pedialyte and whatever else you get that's a guru concoction. It's just physically impossible to survive that kind of onslaught, and you're playing tough matches, and you play doubles, and you're playing tough singles, 3 setters, and then you got to turn around and a couple hours come back. I just think that was ludicrous. I think there should have been better planning done with maybe getting more facilities, maybe play more facilities and play later in the day and earlier in the morning. And just common sense. I mean, play the top kids that are in the draw in the singles, not the back draw. Play the top kids that are in the main draw earlier in the day. Don't be a bonehead and play these back draw kids at 8 in the morning when the other kids that are in the main draw start at 11 or 12 or 1 o'clock in the afternoon. That is just totally ridiculous. So, again, to me, it's either neglect or totally incompetence or just stupidity or all of it combined. So I just think that there's got to be better scheduling. But, you know, that's always a problem. I mean, look what happened with Djokovic and Kevin Anderson. I mean, it's ludicrous to start these guys in. You put a court one in, one of the biggest stadiums in the world, at Wimbledon, and you don't put lights in. Then you get the situation where these guys start late in the day, they start playing 4.5-hour matches, and they have to come off the court to play a sprint race for one set in the final the next day. It's ludicrous. It completely breaks up the whole match, the whole flow of it, the whole ebb and flow, the whole thing is just now just broken up. I mean, I played at Wimbledon many years, and I mean, I remember one year it rained so much, I started on Monday, I didn't finish my match until Friday. But, you know, this is just bad scheduling. I mean, it's just ludicrous. But even at the highest levels, this stuff happens.
But so then we get the argument that, well, this is why we're going to shorten formats, so that we don't run into these issues. You know, it's better for the kids' health to play short sets and to play no ad and to play a 10-point tiebreaker instead of a third set, which in my mind compromises the integrity of the sport. So how do you reconcile those two things?
Look, my kids that I sent to Macon, Georgia, are not unfit people. I make sure they fit. They run a lot of long-distance running. They do gym work. They do sprints. We do all kinds of footwork drills. The kid that I sent to Macon, Georgia, is not unfit. And she collapsed on the court. Why? She played three doubles matches, a singles match in the middle of the day. Next day, come back again, play again in the hottest part of the day. And a tough match. And, you know, and she's 13 years old, and she's just you know, tough as nails. But she collapsed on the court. And then a USTA official has the audacity to say, okay, well, I'm going to put you on my clock now, while her eyes are rolling back in the back of her head. I mean, you should call EMS immediately. I mean, if I was there, that would have been hell to pay. I don't care who they are. That is just utter stupidity. There's a lot more to tennis than just that. I mean, life is more important. Wait till somebody kills her and dies in the seat, and then you're going to find out. Then there's a lawsuit and all that stuff. It's just ludicrous. I mean, you cannot... If they just had some common sense, maybe a little, how about getting a Winnebago that people can sit in, or a 40-foot trailer? There was nothing but a couple of umbrellas. It's and people were sitting in their cars with their kids and the air conditioner on, and then they're going to go and run out and play. I don't know how good that is, but, you know, it just seems like there was just so many things that could have gone wrong, and they did.
Well, and another aspect that I feel like gets either ignored or overlooked is the cumulative effect of playing these matches day after day after day over the course of a week. And so by the fourth or fifth day of the tournament, these kids have no stores of energy. They've depleted their fluids. They've depleted, you know, all of their calories. They're not given ample time to eat a full meal between matches and have it digest. So, you know, by the end of the tournament, the kids that have survived are really running on fumes. And so that's yet another issue that needs to be taken into account for the scheduling aspect.
All right. Well, you know, look, we can't expect 13-year-olds to have the stamina and the wherewithal mentally to be like a professional tennis player of age 20. It's just humanly impossible. So just a little bit more common sense of playing the main draws in those hot conditions. Maybe spread it out. Play them all at different places. Go to tennis clubs and ask them if you could use their courts for up till 11 o'clock in the morning and play the main draw hits in those type of conditions where you feel like you're giving them a chance to survive this thing and not putting them in back-to-back matches in the hottest part of the day and expect them to survive. And go and grab a quick lunch and come back and play another three-hour match. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, nobody does that. Nobody can survive that. I think just common sense. Yeah, tough. I'm not saying you got to coddle these kids. I just say use a little bit more common sense. You want the kids that are doing well in the tournament, take a little bit more care of those kids. The ones that lose first round, they can play maybe a bit later in the day or something. But the main draw kids that are still in, I think you should just be a little bit more conscientious to that effect.
Interesting. And let's talk about the parents' role with all of this, because I know you. I love your PIP concept and letting these kids play in peace without the parents around. And you said that even applies to your coaches, too, that you like to give the kids a break from having the coaches there and let them kind of fend for themselves and see how they do out there without the adult taking care of every little thing. So
exactly.
So in your ideal world, is there a percentage of time that kids should be traveling to tournaments with their parents or with a coach versus, you know, being dropped off at the match and being left to manage?
You know, good question. I think it varies from kid to kid. There are older kids that I think I can easily bring to the tournament, and we have done such good work that I feel like they can play probably more than half of their matches by themselves because they are wise. They have done the work. They know what to think on the court. We've practiced it so much in practice matches. We practice it so much at local tournaments. And beyond that, I feel comfortable to have those kids go and play by themselves. However, 12 and 14-year-olds, you still think you need to be there probably three-quarters of the time, maybe 80% of the time. And parents need to also understand that they also have a role to play. my mom knew when not to be there, and she knew when to be there. And so I rarely knew where my mom was. But what I see a lot is that our American parents are so involved with the tennis, with the kids' tennis, that, you know, the amount of pressure that's being exerted on the child is overbearing, and it is detrimental to the success of a kid. And in our society, I feel like we are so afraid for our kids to fail. We don't want to see them hurt. But unfortunately, in tennis, you learn a lot more from your losses than you do from your wins. And yes, our coaches are at a lot of tournaments, but also parents have a humongous role to play. In fact, they are the most key and essential part of this relationship between them and their child. And I think it is a very vast and interesting subject to go over. And even though I've been in Charlotte now for a couple of years, 3 years, I am definitely going to make a major push forward to bring in experts, not just myself, but other experts to bring to the table, like a Frank Giampolo, maybe even you, maybe Alan Fox, maybe a Jim Lear, those type of people. One, bring them in for a 2 or 3 day long weekend, and three people are going to get indoctrinated into how this tennis should be treated. One, my own coaches, including myself, because I don't know everything. I learn all the time. Nobody is too smart to learn something. But the most important fact is to have the parents be part of this and let them sit in a boardroom with these guys that are experts in the junior field and actually give them a roadmap to this thing. Because I see unbelievable train wrecks between the kid and the father and the kid and the mom, and you know, it's a ball of wax. And unfortunately, the parents need to be educated in this avenue big time, big, big time.
Sure, sure. I mean, it's interesting. I just had this conversation with, I have two brothers, and one of my brothers has young kids that are just starting out in soccer. And I was saying that I would love to go back and redo this junior tennis thing with the knowledge that I have now. And,
sure,
you know, kind of avoid the mistakes. And one, my father pointed out to me, you know, regardless of the mistakes that you feel you made along the way, your son's going to play college tennis. So he stuck,
sure,
with the sport. He maintained a love for the sport. He, you know, set a goal and achieved it. So that's a success story, you know, overall.
Right.
And, you know, that made me feel a little bit better. But it is true. There's so much to learn. And even you're saying we like to coddle our kids and not let them make mistakes. We have to be okay with making the mistakes, too. We parents have to,
sure,
be okay with,
sure,
it. And understand that our kids aren't going to be permanently ruined, you know, if we sign them up,
right,
for the wrong tournament, or we miss a deadline,
right,
or, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, those are totally understandable, quote, errors on parents' part. But what I see is that, you know, the mental side of the tennis game is so neglected, and there's so little understanding of it. And that has to be taught. And, you know, being a good mental IQ competitor in any level of junior tournaments doesn't just hit you in the head and now, oh, I get it. It's something that has to be trained just as much, if not more, than your forehand, your backhand, or any other stroke that you physically try to perfect. So, and this is where the parents come in very big, because you can't just teach the kid all of these things, and then the parent is a hard-driving type A, triple A, plus personality, and they don't understand the tennis, and, you know, they can go fly off the handle about their kid doing something wrong, and then it is something that is easily understandable if you actually knew the sport and you knew where it came from. But, you know, you see a lot of hard-driving American parents, doesn't matter about how much money they have, that miss the boat with their children's mental aspect of their tennis. And that is crucial to keep them in the game and to keep them in the game long-term. And
absolutely,
I think that is where I think I want to make a big difference with my academy parents in the future. You know, it takes money to get these people in and do this on an ongoing basis. But it's something I think is absolutely essential, and I'll be doing more of it.
That's fantastic. I think we have a caller on the line. Let me see if they have a question for us. I have a caller from area code 214684. Are you there?
Yes.
Did you have a question?
Yes. Well, first let me say, Lisa, thanks for a terrific show. And Mr. Creek, it's an honor to listen to you and to have a chance to speak with you. I remember watching you back in the early to mid-80s, and then you were one of my favorites. So thanks for playing such great tennis.
I'm glad your black and white TV. I'm glad your black and white TV worked.
I've got two questions. One, you know, as a parent with young players, and I played tennis, I'd like to get your thoughts on just any sort of best practice tips that you might have for coaching your own kids, or knowing if you are the right coach for your kids, or trying to share that burden with local pros and trying to tap into other people's knowledge. There's nothing more meaningful than working with my children, but it can also be challenging to try to coach your
sure.
own kid. But I just wondered if you had any general thoughts on that. And then second, maybe related to that, do you have any tips for good resources out there on the internet or through books or videos for parents or coaches in junior tennis? I know a lot of the names that get talked about a lot on this show, you know, the Landsdorps and the Jorge Capistrano. A lot of the guests that Lisa has had on the show, I think, are absolutely terrific.
Sure.
But anything else that sort of comes to mind that you think are really great resources for parents or coaches of junior players would be great.
Well, obviously, you know, the aspect of finding a good coach that can give you all the technical aspects of their game, you know, that's really a trial and error situation. And as you become smarter in the whole thing, you can figure it out. And, you know, people will give you advice as to who is a coach that has brought up some kids. And typically somebody that's been in business for at least 10 or 15 years, you know, that's pretty much a good system. So I would say that just hang on a second. So I think on the physical side, I mean, that's just really, it's hard to, you just have to find out from other parents and how much they have enjoyed working with a specific coach. It's a difficult thing to pick somebody right off the bat, but you got to have some sort of, you know, backdrop of knowing who they are and what their qualifications are. The second thing is, the biggest thing for me that I find that is one of the most neglected parts of tennis is really the mental part. And between what Block Talk Radio and some of these other people like Lisa are doing, I think it's a great service for tennis and juniors in general. And also the fact that, you know, Jim Lear, he's written books, Frank Giampolo, mm-hmm. Alan Fox, all of these people are guys from my era and also younger eras that are great people and great resources. Frank Giampolo has written many books, including How to Get Your Kids a Scholarship and all of these wonderful things. Lisa has done a great job. So I think there's quite a bit of opportunity. So I think, you know, any resources like that, books you can read or any listening to blog talks, I think is a great batch of information.
Johan, will you be coaching your own kids?
Oh, my God. I don't know. Sorry. Let me just... I'm getting in my car. Hang on. Let my Bluetooth kick on. Hang on a second.
Okay. Ah, yeah. Technology.
I'm doing everything in one day. Are you there?
We're here.
Okay. Well, I guess my radio didn't go on. But anyway, so definitely, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with my own kids. I think it's a difficult thing to teach your own kids. There's very few people that can actually do that well. But it seems like most of the time it's a train wreck.
Well, getting back to the caller's question, at what point do you know that it's working or it's not working when you're the parent and the coach?
Oh, boy. You know, I cannot really truly answer that question. I think that... you know, I know what it takes to become a professional tennis player. I've been at the highest levels. I've been top 10 in the world. I've won some big tournaments. It's a huge slog. It is a huge commitment. It's even more difficult now than when I even played in the 80s and stuff. But, you know, I think I would have to honestly say, I would have to see how it goes with my kids. I think basically in their formative years, I'll be very involved with their technique. But I think at the end of the day, I still want to be a dad. I think it's a very, very difficult mix to be a dad and a coach. I mean, I know so many parents that have done that. I mean, Monica Sellers' mom, you know, Mr. Williams with these two daughters. You talk about Radwanska's with Piotr, their dad. So many people. And there's some success stories. But I think if you really have to ask them, it's painful at the best of times because it's just difficult. It's difficult to balance both, you know. And I think if you can get where you can maybe find a coach that's a technical, great coach, is very sound, has been around the block, and has been at many, many tournaments for many years, and has the mental acumen that can tie in. And this is the thing: you could have all the attributes of technical stuff and so forth, but if you don't jive with a coach and you don't believe in them, then the kid is not going to really excel. So that's where, you know, the Leonard Berglunds with the Borg and the Tony Palafox maybe with the McEnroe and Pete Sampras with Mr. Fisher and, you know, myself and this guy Ian Cunningham, bless his heart, he's passed away now. But you find those rare times where the coach and the player really connects on a very deep level mentally and push the kid to heights they never thought they could reach. And that's what happened to all these players. And I think that's kind of rare to find. And if you do find it, you better hang on to it. So I would have to kind of feel my way through this with my own kids. I know that my little daughter is going to be an unbelievable athlete. I think she's just showing it already. I don't know, you know, if it's going to maintain itself. You never know. Boyfriends get in the way, school, whatever, life, injuries, you name it. There's plenty of things that can derail this thing. But I'm not forcing my kids to play anything. I'm going to expose her to soccer. I'm going to expose her to baseball. I'm going to expose her to, golf and so forth. And eventually they make up their own minds what they want to do.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate the show.
Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Johan, I wanted to ask you just to kind of expand on that a little bit, too. I know, you know, your kids are still young. As they reach puberty in the teenage years and the hormones start kicking in, you know, all of a sudden mom and dad go from being the most brilliant people on the planet to being the dumbest people on the planet, and they know nothing. And, you know, so it becomes very difficult, even though you have the credentials to teach and the knowledge to teach, your child just doesn't believe that you know what you're talking about anymore. So, I mean, it seems to me that's a period that could be really tricky with being the parent and the coach. What are your thoughts on that?
Right. You know, I personally have not experienced that. I'm sure I will in the next 10 years. My little daughter is 5, and she's hitting beautiful forehands and backhands and starting to learn to serve. And my little guy is 3 years old. He's dragging a racket around. He's going to be like a Ferrer type, I'm sure. He's not going to be very tall. But I'm hoping that he's playing professional soccer because there's a lot more money in it. But anyway, I think it is a tricky thing. And like I said, if you're in a big city where there are some great coaches, is maybe to take the pressure off, is to keep it fresh, keep it fun, and work the best you can around that puberty stage for a couple of years to be there, but also to be supportive and maybe find other people to help you and make it fun for the kid as well. You know, there's a lot more to life than just tennis. Tennis is a great sport. It is my life, but, the only reason I'm still into tennis is because I absolutely love the sport to death. I mean, America has afforded me everything, so tennis is my life. But I think you just have to, go through that period of time, and a lot of kids fall through the cracks, perhaps, but even fall through the cracks between 18 and 21, too, you know, if they're going to go professional.
Sure.
Nothing is, you know, there's no absolutes in tennis, and there's no absolutes in life either. And I just feel like if you're humble in your soul and you try your very best, and you take the opportunities that is in front of you, and you do the best you can, let the chips fall where they may. I'm gonna let my kids fail too. I mean, I'm not gonna be the doting parent and just like give them everything. I mean, they're gonna have to work for whatever they want to receive. And you know, I come from a very humble background, and it's hard for me to see how, sometimes I spoil my kids too. But, we're trying to keep it even, keep it right, keep it real, and make sure that the kids stay in sports, because I think that keeps them off the streets and out of trouble a lot.
What are your thoughts on professional players staying involved in the game at the junior level as coaches, as mentors, as hitting partners? You know, there's been some stuff written about that lately, that that's maybe one of the issues in American tennis, is that our former greats aren't staying involved in the sport. You obviously have stayed very involved.
Yeah. Well, I think they all do things for various reasons. I think the very top of American tennis is pretty much, you know, these guys have made so much money that, you know, they are retired. And there are some that have lent their names to academies and, you know, do some work, but it's nowhere near the work that I think is necessary to bring up the next American champions or champion or champions. There's no reason with what America is afforded via money, facilities, tournaments, wildcards, you name it. There's no reason why there shouldn't be more top kids at the very high end of junior development in this country and in the world. We should always be at the very top. But it just shows you that there could be many reasons why things are not going the right way. And I think the word hunger is a huge topic. And I just think that I'm besotted about tennis. I love it. I'll probably play tennis on my last day. But, I am what I am and they are what they are. I can't really speak for them. And it's sad that I don't see enough. But, I hear a lot from my European counterparts in my time that a lot of them are playing tennis with the youngsters. You know, you got, the top Spanish guys, they practice with their little 16-year-old boys and stuff, you know. And I think that's very important.
So
I think that that's an absolute necessity, and I think it's great. And then they inspire the kids, and that's why they have consistently good kids out of France and Spain, is because the top guys play and they practice in certain areas of the country, and there's a lot of juniors there. So I think that's very important.
What do you think about the prevalence right now of the quote celebrity coaches on the pro tour? And I one of my favorite coaching relationships right now is Lindsay Davenport and Madison Keys. I get so excited when Madison Keys is on court and she's on a TV court and Lindsay's sitting in the player's box and you can see her, getting nervous along with Madison and really reacting in the stands. What are your thoughts on those relationships and are they good for the game?
I think they are very good for the game. I think that, we see more and more of my bracket of ex-player is becoming more the choice for coaching because, we have a very, very vivid understanding of the game because we come from maybe three or four different types of rackets we played with. We played in an era where, being self-sufficient is extremely important. And, I think it's great that we have these celebrity coaches on board. I mean, Stefan Edberg with Becker now, and Lindsay is out there, and, you've got a number of others out there. So I think it's going to be more and more of this type of thing happening.
Well, I love it. I think it's really cool to see the players that I grew up watching and, been watching over the past 30, 40 years still involved in the game. It's very cool. But I would love to see some of our retired, more of our retired American pros back out there. I just being with my son when he's had the opportunity to hit with some of these folks and seeing the expression on his face and how pumped up he is long term after an experience like that. I mean, it's invaluable.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, and this is just a really off-the-cuff remark, certainly. If, for instance, my academy has a relationship with a certain make of a racket, for instance, whether it's Wilson or Yonex or Babel Adesanya, wouldn't that be great to have the manufacturer say, listen, we believe such and such an academy is a great, great starting group. We love to be involved with them. A lot of the kids are... are really good and they want to play well. Wouldn't that be great to, like, before the U.S. Open, a week beforehand, or if you have any time during the year, any time that you have off, if you can come over there for a day or two, and we'll pay for you, and you're going to go to this academy, and you can make it a round robin type of thing, where you go to one in Florida, you go one in, you know, maybe mine, or you go to California, or you go anywhere. I mean, it just would be such a boost. And, you know, these manufacturers and sponsors all have certain commitment requirements from their players. But what a great thing to have the makes of rackets and shoes come and do a demo day or something, and they bring the actual pro to your facility. I mean, it just makes the world a difference for these kids.
Oh, my gosh. That's a fantastic idea. I love it.
And I have never seen anybody do it.
Yeah.
And,
well, they
you know,
do it
you
at the big event.
Right. Well, you got to go there. And who makes the money?
Right. Right. So, very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's so much to even talk about the incubation of tennis. I mean, the ITF junior, the ITF tournaments, not the juniors, the ITF professional tournaments, the prize money in those events have been stagnated for 35 years. How is that possible? How can we think that the next Rafa Nadal, now that we know that the physical requirements of getting on the pro tour is vastly different from the 70s and 80s than it is today. So now you can actually really truly say, okay, well, I'm going to go to college and beat myself up with the top D1 schools. And if I come out, I am very close to top 300, 400 in the world in terms of quality of striking and tennis ball. And so you could literally now, you know, go. But then the thing is, some kids don't go that route, and they go and play all these tournaments, and you would have to have a very wealthy family or a very wealthy uncle or an unbelievable sponsor to go out there at $150,000 a year to go out and cover your costs, to try and make it on a tour. It's unbelievably expensive. And so, you know, it's the ITF should really address that terrible inadequacy of funding. I'm not saying that a player should play ITF tournaments and make a living, but to get paid for like £9 in England for a semi-final doubles is ludicrous. You might as well not even offer prize money. It's a slap in the face. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of things like that that needs to be addressed, because, you know, there are going to be so many talents that fall by the wayside in our sport unless there's a way for these kids to make some sort of a living wage where they can actually continue to play while they do this for a couple of years, but not to bankrupt the family.
Ooh, wouldn't that be nice?
No, it would be nice, but, you know, it's a vexing problem. I mean, there's no clear-cut answers, but I honestly think that if the ITF has not raised the ITF 10,000 and so with prize money for so long, I mean, I remember when I played, I would win a satellite tour event and I'd make $1,000. Well, that $1,000 can go maybe 2-3 weeks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I stay privately, you know, I got to buy a bus ticket or I get a flight or whatever, and food and stringing your rackets, and there's a lot of costs. But you got to, today it's, you know, these guys fly all over the place to go make some points, and they have to bring their own bank. And it's very difficult on family finances. But I think that there should be a way to increase some prize monies in these ITF incubation events that makes a little bit more sense in terms of financial backing.
Well, I agree with you 100%, and there's certainly a lot of young players out there writing and blogging about that exact issue, and, you know, it's very interesting to read what a day in the life looks like for one of these young players out on the tour.
Yeah.
It's not so pretty.
It's not Roger Federer and Djokovic and Murray, and that's for sure.
No.
And I don't
definitely
blame these guys. They deserve everything they got. They got this.
Yeah.
But I think that we are being short-sighted as our fathers of our tennis to not look at this incubation areas for betterment for the game of tennis globally. And I don't think we're doing enough a job at the very high-end sponsors and so forth.
Right.
But that's about it.
Mm. Well, a lot to think about, a lot to talk about, and thank you so much for coming on today. I know you're just swamped with camps and getting new tires and all the things that are involved in running an academy and a family, but I do appreciate you taking time out.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to you, and I wish you best of luck with what you do. You do a great job, and I hope people listen to you and get the advice they need for their juniors. And, you know, tennis is a great sport, and I'm glad that it's alive and well.
Me too, and thank you so much for all you do. I know the kids that train with you absolutely love you. The parents have wonderful things to say, and I'm still, at some point, I'm going to get over there and check out your academy, and even though I don't have a junior player anymore, but it would still be fun to come out and watch. So
no problem.
I look forward to doing
that. I'll hand over my two little skrmunkles to you if their brains are fried and Dad can't come up with a solution. I'll give them to you and Alan Fox and those guys.
Perfect. I would love it.
But anyway.
Well, thank
you
again,
Johan. Lisa. All the best.
All the
You're
best
welcome.
To you,
anytime.
Too. Thanks.
You too. Take care.
You too. And to my listeners, thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Johan's always entertaining and always has lots of food for thought. So take what he has to say back, mull it over, and see how you can plug it into your junior tennis path. And I hope he was of help to you today. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next week on Parenting Aces.